Welcome to another episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? The podcast that says it's okay to believe in free speech and democracy, and it's also okay to disagree with leftist populist ideologies. Today's subject is the internet conspiracy against happiness and family values. I'll be talking about why companies like Facebook, Google, and Apple are promoting such strong left-wing agendas, why they are against family values and people being happy, why they're stimulating such misery and anger in the world. Why would anyone want people to be miserable and angry? The first step to understanding this is simple. Some of the largest companies in the world, like Facebook and Google, make more money the more time you spend on your screen. So their business plan is simple. They want to addict you to your screen and get you spending as much time on your screen as possible and as little time on other healthier pursuits. The moment people disconnect and start doing meaningful and healthy things like playing sport, spending time with loved ones, sleeping, these companies stop making money. So they want to disconnect you from all of these kinds of activities because that is their business plan. So the better they manipulate you to be addicted to your screen, the more successful they become. And what is manipulation but control of your thoughts and emotions? So to condition you to increase their profits, they need to change societal culture so that people are more vulnerable to their control. This is not a conspiracy theory. It is a straightforward business equation. And Google, Facebook, and Apple make no secret of the fact that they are spending billions of dollars to employ some of the greatest minds in the world with one intent: to control your mind and addict you to your screen for their profit. And it's working, because if you look around, you'll see all the mind-controlled people who genuinely believe that so-called progressive politics are morality, that promoting taking offense, being angry, and being miserable is the path to happiness for society, that dividing up people by race, gender, and ideology will create unity, that narcissism is good for you and good for society. The entire equity movement is completely illogical, unfair, and divisive. These concepts are so obvious, so historically proven, so utterly opposed to all sociological and psychological evidence, that it is remarkable that anyone, let alone the majority of people, should actually believe that this sinister propaganda is morality. But your next question is a very good one. Why? Why are Google and Facebook so interested in promoting these agendas, in promoting negative politics? Why do they want people to be miserable and angry? Why would they oppose family values and promote socialism? I mean, these are the biggest capitalist companies in the world. Why are they promoting socialism? Why do they keep banning my innocuous reels that I try and put on Facebook about taking personal moral responsibility and the importance of embracing reality, which they send me a message saying that this is disruptive? Let me systematically and logically answer these questions. Happy people who hang out together, who love each other, who spend time with their friends, their loved ones, go on picnics, play tennis, spend less time on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And worse than that, happiness is bad for screen time, because happy, productive people want to be with each other. They want to work hard, so they spend less time on their screens. And anger, fear, and negative sensationalism are attention grabbing. Most people will not stop their car to look at roadside flowers, but they will stop to look when there's a major motor vehicle accident. And the worse the damage, the more injured people are, the longer they'll stop and stare. And that is proven in research. So we understand, and the internet definitely understands, that the promotion of misery and anger on screens will attract people and keep them attached, glue them to their screens, and grow their addiction. In fact, YouTube has an algorithm that when you start watching videos, it feeds you ever more sensationalist and extreme versions of what you're watching so that you will stay attached to your screen. And I'm sure you know many people who sit up at night watching inflammatory YouTube reels instead of sleeping. Because you guessed it, when people sleep, Google stops making money. But there is a fundamental challenge for these radical leftist politics promoted by self-serving corporations. And that is, up until now, most people in the West have been reasonably happy and relatively prosperous. So to be disruptive, and remember that's what Facebook keeps emailing me, that I'm being disruptive by opposing their politics, they must destabilize Western democratic philosophy. They must divide people, because divided, angry people are much easier to control. And they must win the battle for control of information, because history and facts are the enemy of narrative and propaganda. We want to get people to get their knowledge from where? The internet, because then we can feed them more propaganda, more self-serving information to keep them attached to their screens and to keep them angry and miserable so they spend more time on their screens. The more money, the more control. So to destabilize the West, we see the reemergence of the promotion of the most disastrous and failed historical experiment, socialism, which killed more people in the 20th century than any other political system. And you have to ask why the biggest capitalist companies in the world would promote socialism. So, besides trying to disrupt Western democratic culture, socialism discourages people from believing in their governments. So we have the death of nationalism. People shouldn't have to work hard. They should rather spend more time on their screens. Because if people are working hard, they're not spending time on their screens. So what we promote is that we should not look up to successful people. And we have propaganda that anyone who is successful must have achieved what they've achieved by taking advantage of oppressed and persecuted people, rather than admiring the endeavor and hard work, which is the root cause of most success in the world. And our next step is to displace free speech with totalitarianism. So anyone who disagrees with this populist ideology is an enemy, a bigot, a xenophobe. So now we have successfully taken control of information, and we've successfully taken control of the minds of people. And we've also destabilized our opponents, because anyone who disagrees against our miserable, angry politics that divide people is labeled an enemy of the people, and they get persecuted by the angry mob that we've mobilized. People are naturally attracted to tribalism. So these political movements are not invented by the internet, but the internet is taking advantage of our natural human disposition to tribalism. And now that we've created this division between people, the more people feel angry, the more marginalized they feel, the more they attach to their screen to spend time on the internet with other people who have the same mindset, the other angry people who feel marginalized. And the less likely they are to re-engage with people who disagree with them, who might actually try and reconnect them to their lives and give them a more positive spin on the universe. The more that victimhood is promoted, because we know that victimhood is very fashionable, the more people feel helpless and despairing. They can't solve the problems in their lives. There's no hope. So what do? They connect to their phone so that they can find solace with other angry victims who feel the same way that they do, so they don't disconnect from their screen and try and work hard to make their lives better. And that's the reason why Facebook bans my reels, where I promote people taking personal moral responsibility for their lives, because that's bad for internet profits. The more righteously indignant people become, the more tribal, the less risk anyone will think for themselves and re-engage positively. And all the while, they isolate with their phones and share their venom with each other. Their screens manipulate them to become even more toxic, because misery loves company. The more righteously indignant they become, the more they see everyone else as evil. And so the more passionate they become about fighting against these bad people who dare to have contrary views to their own. This feeds the herd mentality and they feel good about being angry together. They don't have to do anything to improve their lives. They don't have to do anything to improve society. So we have the promotion of radicalized protest politics. Great for screen addiction, but very bad for happiness and societal unity. People lose faith in each other, in Western democracy. If you don't believe me, look at all these climate change protests. Why are they only protesting against Western democratic countries who are the most environmentally responsible countries in the world? Why aren't they protesting China, Russia, Middle Eastern countries, Africa? They seem only interested in bringing down Western democracies. And that's not to say that we shouldn't be environmentally friendly. It's to show how all of these toxic politics are largely directed at reducing confidence in Western democracy, which is the only political system which has given people great quality of life, equality, freedom, human rights, women's rights, gay rights, and yet all of the protesters who are supporting these kinds of movements direct all their energy against the very countries that are giving them what they ostensibly claim they want. Facebook and Google don't want people spending time with their families because that distracts from screen time. So we have demonization of more conservative people who believe in family values because we want to reduce their influence on society. There is the creation of a generation gap by flooding the internet with climate change propaganda and demonization of the older generations, which is quite ironic because the major activism for women's rights, for environmental responsibility, and for racial equality was actually driven by that generation. But we don't want children listening to their parents because their parents might tell them to get off their screens, to get off their social media accounts, and to spend their time doing things that are actually healthy and productive because that's what's actually good for children. So the internet promotes the idea that parents are a generation of planet-destroying, xenophobic bigots. Now that we've made young people so angry with their parents, where do they go? To their rooms. And what do? They attach to their screens. And who do they talk to? Other discontented teenagers who are equally angry with their parents. And now they are so addicted to their screen that when their parents try to get them off it, they become much more agitated and angry because of their addiction. And who wins in this equation? Are teenagers happier? Is society happier? No, I'll tell you who wins. The internet companies that profit from people spending more time on their screens. But remember, the internet is trying to direct people to spend more time on their phones, and they understand that it is anger and misery that promotes screen time. So they must also create a world that is focused on feelings, a world of narcissism, because they want people to move into the world of feelings. Why? Because then they'll be more miserable and angry, they won't listen to logic, and then they will spend more time with their phones, which stimulate those feelings. Narcissistic people who spend all their time posting reels and videos and selfies of themselves, being brittle and angry about everyone who isn't part of this culture or disagrees with them, that their feelings are the most important thing in the world. And once people become preoccupied about the importance of their own feelings, they become immune to facts, to history, to other perspectives. So what has the internet achieved? Totalitarianism, complete control of this generation, who are going to buy iPhones, who are going to spend their time on YouTube and Google, and away from their families and productive pursuits. Another important question is, why is there such a promotion of disrespect for rules and infrastructure on the internet? That we don't need rules, we don't need infrastructure. Why? Because we should just care about our feelings. That's what's important. So this is what you need to understand. The last thing that Facebook, that Google wants is regulation. They need to fight against regulation because the more that governments regulate them, the less control they have and the less money they make. You still don't believe me? Okay, what I want to point out to you is that the propaganda promotes the opposite of what they are actually doing. So the word is privacy. Everyone is obsessed with privacy. But nobody objects to the fact that Google and Apple devices listen in on your conversations, read your emails, so that they can send you advertising to make more money out of you and send you inflammatory messages so that you become more attached to your screen. We hear the word tolerance, but in practice we see totalitarianism, which is the opposite of tolerance. It's the antidote to tolerance. We hear freedom, but what we actually see is censorship. We hear about the need to reduce misinformation and disinformation, but the people who are saying that are the people who are promoting internet propaganda, which gives us the misinformation and disinformation. So it's the radical left-wing parties in the world are the ones who are talking about misinformation and disinformation and the need to censor anyone who thinks differently. When we talk about fairness and equality, what we actually promote is exclusive favoritism to a fashionable minority. Now, if you want to learn how to deal better with the scourge of the internet and digital addiction, please listen to my podcasts and YouTube videos on the most important message in the world. If you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to follow me and share it with your friends. And join me for the next episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? Please note that the views and opinions on this show are my own and do not reflect those of my colleagues or employers.